The art of basket making is older than ceramics. It was one of the first things that almost every culture did, is they would take natural material around them, weave them together, and start converting them into functional objects. Some became baskets, some became fabric, some became a thatched roof. It's just, but the idea of interlacing natural material, and actually to make them waterproof is where ceramics kind of came by. They started padding them with the ceramic material, and then realized that the reeds would burn off and you'd have a nice little bowl. The commonalities, especially in this group, is aside from the hills, is the people are very independent. They use materials that are indigenous to the area. They're really proud of their culture, and they translate their culture through their arts, their crafts, like baskets, and music in storytelling. So it really makes a lot of sense to start, kind of overlaying one culture with another and showing the number of things that we do that are very, very similar and some things that aren't. One of the things that is actually dedicated a big part of the show to is fishing. I have a number of fish traps that were done by some of the indigenous in the Andes. I also have a couple of Appalachian fish traps, fish netting, just about any way of acquiring food and working. They're different materials, but some of them, the objects are almost exactly the same.
It seems almost inevitable when you're talking about weaving together baskets. There's only so many ways to do it. So parallels are inevitable. There are going to be similarities between the baskets made in modern North America, modern Appalachia, and those made in the Andes.
Well, that's true. The function of them, the function ranges everywhere from very, very pragmatic working pieces. I have to carry something from one spot to another, to objects that you just put on a shelf and enjoy because they're beautiful. So those things seem to run parallel. The specifics quite often are very different. There are ways that objects are tied together, different types of knotting, and the way that material operates quite often is different. And you get some really unusual spins on ideas. One of the classic Appalachian baskets is it's called a hen basket or a chicken basket, and it was designed to put a broody hen in to take it to the next farm. Well, I was in a market outside of Sisquili in Ecuador, and this lady had a basket that looked like it might do that, but it looked totally different visually, but the function looked like it might be the same. And I went over and I said, "What is that?" And she goes, "A hen basket." And it, really, what do you? It was exactly the same function, but it looked completely different. And in the show, we have two of the Andes hen baskets, and we have two Appalachian hen baskets. So following the functions, they're very similar, but the way that the different minds of, kind of come up with the designs and looks of them is quite different.
Has that functionality started to go away, meaning it's become more of an art form and less of something that we use day in, day out?
That's a real interesting, at least for me, that was a really interesting area. What was happening in the marketplaces there was plastic was replacing anything that was woven. It was very pragmatic, and it was a decision I would make too. I could use a plastic box, for a couple of cents, I could buy a plastic box, put my things that I'm going to sell into it, it'll move well in a truck, and I can put them on their sides, and it's a great display rack. Why do I need to buy a basket that's going to be much more expensive and harder to work with? Well, what that meant was that there was very hard to find people making baskets. The economy had pretty much dropped out.
And you're talking about South America.
Yeah, right? In South America. Well, in the States, that was happening in the 50s and 60s primarily, especially when the interstates replaced the highway systems. So when something that's ubiquitous and everybody thought, baskets, they're everywhere, and they didn't have a lot of value, when really good quality pieces go away, people then realize what's gone, they'll start looking for them, wanting to buy them again, and when they come back, they're a totally different object. So the baskets that are being made up here now are rarely functional. I mean, and they're fairly expensive, and they're very fine and very exquisite. And as a friend of mine pointed out, you're not going to throw your keys in a $300 basket. They end up being an object that you you look at and you really do enjoy. We're about 50 years ahead of what's going on in Ecuador.
But they're starting to fade away now, their functionality.
Yeah, it's really hard to find a good basket maker down there now. They're kind of being choked off where, you know, it's really kind of gone through a resurgence up here. And the way people approach them is really different, too. The makers, there are pieces that are handed through families in Ecuador. That also happens here in the States. In the States, I would go to a family, and they would, it's like I went all through the Appalachian region picking out objects to show off. And I would look at a collection a family would have. And every time I point out a basket, I'd say, will you sell that to me? And they look at me in horror and go, no, I'm not going to sell that to you. What I will do is I'll loan it to you to put it in the show. Why is that? That basket was made by my great-great-aunt so-and-so who gave it to this person. Uh-huh. The entire family story is in this object. And they know every broken rib who did it. You know, there's no way in the world they're going to sell that part of their family and their family story away. So I think what's going to happen in Ecuador is probably the same thing. They're just going to be a bit behind us while it's happening.
And the show that you're putting together for the Lexington Library, yeah. Talk to me about it. There's about 100 pieces,
right.
I know. Yeah. How did you curate that? What were the standards that you tried to adhere to?
Yeah. I could have filled that place 10 times over. There's a couple of questions. Well, one of the questions was, when is a basket not a basket? You have woven material, and when does it become something else like fabric or, a hat or a thatched roof? And we decided to take a really loose view of that. If it was woven together, we would consider putting it in the show. The next thing was who gets in the show, and kind of weighting things on based on function over to artistic pieces. We have some of the very best artists on both sides of the equator. I guess the last part of it was, just the way we weight the pieces also. We have excellent pieces in the show. We also have pieces that are just downright beaten up. I mean, literally falling apart. But I wanted to have a couple of those in there to show how they're made. So if something's falling apart, you can start seeing the construction of it. So we're kind of across the board in every case.
And your focus was to highlight the parallels, the similarities between baskets in North America and South America, mm-hmm. but also, I suspect, to preserve a vanishing art form.
Right, right. At least on their side, we're doing pretty well. weaving has become really important, at least on the craft level. And back in, I think it was 1970, I was talking to one of the former heads of the organization. The Kentucky Guild of Arts and Crafts had one basket weaver in it. And that was a fellow out, and his name is Childress. He was out in western Kentucky. They're almost as popular as the ceramicists. That is a big issue, is just making sure the tradition does stay on.
I'm curious, any chance of an exchange where some know-how is exchanged back and forth between the two cultures, maybe to help the folks of the Andes kind of make that transition into baskets as an art form?
Well, there's an ongoing conversation right now with the embassy, because the embassy and State Department underwrote part of the project. And when I was down there, there was a lot of that going on because they would give me time when we came upon a weaver that I could show them what I was doing. But more importantly to me, they would show me what they're doing. And often I'd be sitting next to them, working. If I do go back and we were talking about launching a show down there in Quito, we will do a series of workshops. And the only strings I put on it, I said, if you have students that show up for the workshop, the students don't get charged. And they agreed to that immediately. It's real important, especially with the young ones, that they learn how to do that.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Not a problem.